I'm sure you've been asked this a bunch of times over the last few weeks since the trade deadline, but what does it mean to you and how special is it for you, Gary, to see those comparisons between yourself and your son, Portland versus Toronto being traded 41 games into the year, all of the comparisons and all the parallels that are there? Just kind of eerie to see how the stars aligned when this deal went down as it did.
Well, there's no comparison between me and my son's game. My son's game is a whole other level than mine, as it should be. My son is a different player than me, and I had to give him everything I didn't have from a skill set standpoint, you know. Watching him come to Toronto is a very beautiful thing. I wish that he could actually be in that city because, you know, it's one thing to hit Toronto, play a game, and leave, but to live there, go to restaurants there, hang out there, and see it, it's a different experience, you know.
Gary, tell me about your experience. I was here. I remember when you were part of the trade. Eric and I were covering the team, and I was, you know, broadcasting, still am. When you were brought in, what were your first thoughts when you came to Toronto? Because back then, Toronto didn't, unless you were here, it didn't have the same appeal that it does now. What were your first thoughts when you got brought in here?
My first thought when I came to Toronto was, I'm getting ready to have all the opportunity in the world to play. Because they just fired the general manager and sold the team. Like, so everything was back to, like, water and flower stages. So I'm like, man, maybe I could be a part of this, you know. And that was my thought process. I was excited. You know, I spent many years in Portland, and, you know, the guys kept coming in, getting opportunities. Brian got his opportunity, Jermaine, Rashid. So when I went to Toronto, I was like, man, and you know, Butch had a good conversation with me of what he was trying to do and his expectation. You know, Butch didn't come in trying to tank and trying to, you know, lose games. Butch was like, listen, man, we gotta rebuild this and we get ready to start right now. And, you know, and it was good.
Speaking with Gary Trent Sr. Gary, just as a side note as well, and I'm sure you've got some fond memories. He's talked about you a bunch of times over the last few weeks since the trade went down for your son. But we've got Alvin Williams coming on the show right after you. He's coming on in about 10, 15 minutes. What was that sort of bond like, if there was one, in terms of just with Al specifically, when you're being traded, when you're being dealt to a team that's going through that upheaval that you're speaking of and that fresh start that you're speaking of, and you don't know anybody yet on the team except for, you know, the dudes that you're coming over with from Portland to try and start anew in Toronto?
Oh, man, Al, I was in my third year, so, you know, I had been around enough. Plus, I'd already, you know, Toronto had had the draft and all of that. So it was cool. But that was my young fella, man. I got a lot. He had some great times. You know, by him being a rookie and hearing and seeing some of the things I might have been conversating about or doing, you know, he probably was like sticking your finger in a light socket the way he had his eyes like, whoa. But we had great times, man. And, you know, it was great to watch him come up as a youngster and get big contracts and have success. And I love that.
Gary, how much did you talk to Junior about coming to Toronto in terms of, like, what you knew? And I mean, he's eventually, we hope, going to end up in the city. You know, they're talking about next year having, in September, the NBA wants to start back with fans in arenas. And I don't know how they're going to do it, but that would mean that hopefully the government gives in here in Canada and we get our team back. How much did you talk to him about the city itself and being here and what he should expect?
Well, you know, he's been there a couple of times. And, you know, like I told him, it's just a different culture, you know. And he was excited because he's like, you know, Toronto got like 27 million people, or Canada, you know. So just – and being the only basketball team now that Vancouver is in Memphis. So it's like all eyes on us. We don't have any competition. All we got to do is just win – and let the city ride with us. That was more of his mindset. I think, you know, playing in Tampa is cool. And, you know, at this stage of my son's career, it doesn't matter where he played. He just wanted to be playing just free, just with an opportunity and just feeling wanted, you know. So, you know, whether it's Tampa or Toronto, I think it'll be a different level of energy when it goes back to Toronto, because though this is really, you know, Canadians in Toronto, this is really our thing, you know. So I think it'll be a different level of energy in the crowd because it's been gone for so long. I think the players are going to feel that love and energy, and I think it's going to be like real fireworks when they have like a real regular season game in Toronto, you know.
Speaking with Gary Trent Sr. Gary, when you speak about your son, and you know, I'm a father of a young son as well, and Jonesy's got a few kids, and listen, any parent listening right now, speaking about the pride that they have for their children, what does it mean to you to think back to stories of young Gary Jr. and when did you see, or when did you know that there was something special there? And I'm going to share with you, and hopefully you don't mind me, because he shared the story. I talked to your son when the day after that he was dealt to Toronto. I was able to get him on the phone through Raptors Media Relations. We talked for a couple of minutes, and one of the things that he passed along to me, he goes, I think I was 4 or 5, and my dad asked me how good I wanted to be and how bad I wanted it. And when I told him that I wanted to be the best and that I really wanted it bad, he told me, and you tell me if I'm relaying the story correctly or not, Gary, he said that you guys for at least a full year barely touched a basketball court, might not have even touched a court at all. You took a ball to a local track, and you ran laps. And he said every 100 meters, he had to drop and give you 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups, and then get up and run the next 100, drop 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups. Then you would work on ball handling skills, and you'd be working left hand, right hand, and whatever else. And he said there were a few times where he was tired, and he'd be falling down. And he said, you started to walk away. See ya. See ya, buddy. You clearly don't want it. And he would pick himself back up and dust himself off and keep working again. First of all, is that story accurate? And when did you know that you could really push your kid that much because you saw that talent, that skill, potential, and everything in him?
Well, when he was like 3 years old, I would take him to the track. It was a middle school that I had went to that was down the street from our house. We lived in a suburb called Gahanna, Ohio. So it was Gahanna Middle School. I would go down to the track, and I would just walk backwards, and I'd be like, bye-bye. And he at about 3 or 4 years old, he just always started trying to jog after me, and he cried. I'd be like, bye-bye. You know what I'm saying? So I always used that track. So then once he got about 5 and I'm asking him about the basketball thing, you know, what do you want to do? Because now I'm new. This is my first son and all that. So when I asked him about the basketball thing, and he said he wanted to be great at it, and he wanted to be good and all of this stuff, okay, cool. I didn't really know what I was doing. I wasn't I played basketball, but people have this perception that everybody that played basketball just automatically know how to coach or automatically know how to do player development. No, it gives you an advantage depending on how high level of basketball you played. But at the same time, there's still a science and a technique and a formula that needs to be applied to make it successful. So I took my son to the track. Was like, I know my son gonna be. I need to make him a guard. He gonna need to have handles. I would just make him do dribbling drills. At your pace, just dribble left, right, between the legs, behind the back, all that. When you get to that 100 meter, stop. Give me 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups. Come around the curve, same thing. And I would have him do this for 4 laps. So it'd be a mile worth of dribbling. You know, to me, I always measured the work. So when I measure it, it's like when we go to the gym, we got 300 makes today. We're not here to just 10 at a spot. You go 1 for 10, 2 for 10. No, we're gonna go 15 at this spot, and if it take you too many to make this 15, we're gonna start over, you know. And that was the way I stood on him, you know. Like my second son, he doesn't play sports. He plays football a little bit, but I couldn't stand on him like that because he wasn't that interested in playing basketball, and I had to accept that and found a balance in that. And we do other things, but there's a certain way I'm going to coach and a certain way I'm going to drive my kids or any kid that play for me, and even my own son. If you're not going to be driven like that, you can't play for me. And it's just flat out like that. I'm not going to change my coaching style to adjust to my kids and make it soft. Like I told my second son, you can't play for me because what I preach. You're not. My son can't come in last. My son can't be middle of the pack. You got to throw up when you play for me. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all that my son told you, yeah, it was true. That's what we started. So my thing was, let's start with dribbling. And I had just retired, So in that process, I didn't have a lot of gym hookups and a lot of relationships and all that. So basically, we can be outside and we can get this dribble in. And then as time goes on, I, you know, start seeing what youth leagues was good, where could we get in the gym at and this and that. And then I eventually got my own teams by the time he got to, like, first grade. And from there on, we went on, you know. But I felt like my son, like, I played with a team out of Indiana because, you know, they border Ohio. Mm-hmm. So I met this guy named Mike Peterson at a tournament. You know, I took my first AAU team. It wasn't even my team. I was the assistant, but the guy that was the head coach, something happened with the organization and a couple other teams. So he left me as the head coach. This is my first games. I ain't never coached in my life. I lost the first game by like 48-2. The next game was like 50-3. And then, like, the last game was, like, 56-0, and a kid on my team, like, threw the ball up with no time on the clock and basically hit the jumper as time expired, and we had 2 points. Like, man, I'm talking about I got the greasy. That was the first time I had ever, had coaching weekend. So from that moment forward, I started going around the city, talking to parents, recruiting kids, putting teams together, and I met that guy at the tournament out of Indiana. He's like, man, you know, your team ain't really doing too well, but your son, he got some talent, man. You should maybe rock with me. So from second grade to eighth grade, we played with this AAU team. We win 3 national titles. Second grade, we came in first out of 38. Then we went to Cocoa Beach. Now, on this team, we got Paul Scruggs, who's at Xavier. We got Michael Porter on the team. We got Chris Wilkes, and we got my son all in elementary. This is not like once everybody's 6'10", you want to put them on the team. We were doing this when they were babies, you know? And it just happened to be everybody was in Indiana except us. And we won 3 titles, but every year we made it to the Final Four. And my son was always one of the bigger guards and one of the better guards. Sometimes he was the best guard, or sometimes he was in the top 2 or 3 guards. So as I saw that throughout those 6, 7, 8 years, it gave me confidence, like, okay, my son has a legit chance. You know what I'm saying? And that's when I really, you know, as I watched him over the years, because everybody thinks their kid is about to be the next thing. I'm not that parent. You need to show me the work. You need to show me you're going to be focused. You need to show me you're going to do this. I'm not about to stamp you because you're my child. That it don't work like that. So as I saw that over the years, that's when I started it. And my son went to this camp as a freshman down in Atlanta, and he came back like ranked 20th in his class. So that was the first time he really like got a ranking and got stamped. By his junior year, he was the number one shooting guard in the country. He had 2 gold medals, was team USA MVP. So my son, you know, throughout his whole career, he's always been a winner, man. You know, he's got, like I said, gold medals, state championships, national championships as a kid, football championships. And I think that build self-esteem and character to not always just be in sports losing and participating, man. You got to participate at a certain level to be great. You know, a lot of people don't understand why Jordan was so great. Jordan was so great because every night his greatness was challenged. So, you know, when you're in high school and you like Shaq, you're not going to see but 1 7-footer maybe in life. You know, nowadays with these summer leagues, you see more. But a kid like Wiseman 15 years ago, he might have played against 1 7-footer. So his greatness is deep because it's not near the surface because it's not challenged enough. Mike got challenged every night. So his greatness was always at the surface or on top of the surface because he never got a chance not to be great because it was always challenged. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, Gary, everything you just talked about, like great stories and insight into to you know Gary's upbringing and what you did with him as a father, as a coach. I'm sure you've seen this quote, but I wanted to read it to the audience as well. This is from your son in an article in the Undefeated. He said, "My dad means everything in the world to me. Without him, I wouldn't be where I'm at today in no phase of life, whether it's academic, whether it's basketball talent. He's taught me everything on and off the court, and without him, I don't know where I would be. I'm so thankful for him." Man, that is something that every parent wants to hear from their kid at some point in their life, because I don't want to put words in your mouth, Gary, but everything you just talked about, and then when you hear a quote like that coming from your son, what you did, I'm sure, to better his life, to better him as a basketball player, as a young man, as a grown man, as a student, to try and make his life better than what your life was?
Well, I wanted to give him everything that I didn't have in life, but just not materialistically. You know, people always say, I want to give my kids everything I didn't have. Yeah, I want to do that too, but I want to show my kids and teach my kids everything I didn't know. You know, however good my math was at 10 years old in school, son, your need, as a parent, my son's math need to be that good at 7 or 8. You know, however good I could read at 10 years old, my son better be reading like that at 7 or 8, or I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing as a parent.
Yeah.
You know, my son had a chance to make some history that very few people on the planet could have did. My son was playing varsity at Apple Valley as an 8th grader. So, Tyus Jones was on the team at the time, and my son was in school, and by him being in middle school, he got out of school at like 3:15, but the high school got out at 2:30, so they started practice right at then. So my son had to really leave school, get over there, and practice for like the last hour, 45 minutes. And as a middle schooler, that's something exciting. But also at the same time, it can make you become unfocused, because when I'm going to the parent-teacher conferences, I'm listening to the teachers say this and that. And, you know, at that point in stage and age, boys might be feeling themselves, and you're super popular. You a middle schooler playing at the high school. So as I'm listening to it, I'm like, I'm asking the teacher, this is his last class of the day. My son basically mentally punching out because he's thinking about practice. So he had a couple of C's. I went to the high school coach and told him, my son off the team. My son is off the team. And he was like, like, Gary, why you, you know, I had never in life taken my son out of sports. Listen, my son might have had the flu. Like, there was times where his mom, my wife would be mad at me because, like, my son might have had the flu in the morning and couldn't go to school. But when we're going to go to practice tonight, I want you to practice with the flu. I want you to practice with the flu because I want, if you ever have a pro career and you have the flu, I want you to know what it's going to feel like. You're going to be lightheaded. You're going to be winded fast. You're going to be dizzy, and your stomach's going to be weak. I said, so I want you to come to practice today and play with the flu, because if it ever happened and you need to do it, you're going to have to do it. My wife was mad at me. You're driving him too hard. That's why he's sick, because he's practicing too hard. You know, all that. I had to listen to all that. But my son had his career high when he was had the flu. Yeah, it didn't come till 10 years later, but that moment he was already prepared for it. Most people, all you sick, son, stay at home, get your rest, get your body better. Nah, son, get up and let's do this while you have the flu, because this is what you're going to have to do. So to me, it was just a different type of mix that I was putting in my son. And to listen to him say those things, that's probably where that comes from that level of discipline. And just motivating him and keeping him structured. So when I take my son off the team, I tell him, we going to the game on Friday to watch the game. I'm going to make him watch the game of the team that you should have been on. So I come home at that Friday. He hadn't came home. I couldn't find him yet. So we missed the game. I'm like, oh, no. So the team won. Tyus and them won. So I told my son, hey, listen, when you get out of school Friday, come straight home and wait here till I get here. Boom, come home. I take him to the game. I said, so let me tell you something about life. I said, the next time you ever have to be taken off a sports team, because you'll be in high school next year, it's going to be because of what you did. I said, I want you to understand what it feels like now to have basketball taken away, to have everything taken away, all your popularity diminished because you want to act a fool and act cool in school. I said, so here's what I need you to do. I need you to walk through the crowd, all them little girls and all your little homeboys that's all pumping you up. I said, when they asking you, hey, Gary, why you ain't playing, man? What's going on? Say, my dad took me off the team because I was effing up in school. I said, make sure you tell them that. Put that out there, too. I said, because you know what? I said, Mike Tyson done had to take a walk of shame. Tiger Woods had to take a walk of shame. I done had to take a walk of shame. I said, right now, I need you to understand what a walk of shame feel like. So go sit over there in the student section and watch the game. And that's what I took him off the team. And the coach kept calling me every week, like, Gary, I think we're going to do something special, man. Bring him back. I think we're going to do something special. They won the state championship, and I never took my son back because I told the coach this. I said, this is the last grading period. I said, so unless I see something different out of my son's grades and his behavior at the end of the final result, not in the middle of the grading period, the teacher's telling me, yeah, he changed, he's doing this, he's doing that. I said, that's halfway. I said, until the end of the grading period and the results come in of what his total behavior was and what his total grades was, I said, I can't change my stance until I see a change in what's supposed to be going on for real. I said, so my son ain't coming back to the team. And they won the state championship. And he won the state championship. And my son had a chance because he could have won a 5-time, you know?
Listen, man, that's how you make a diamond. Put it under pressure. We all know that's how it works. I do want to ask you one thing. We're up against the clock. We need to ask you this. Eric and I, our producer, we've all talked about this. In a podcast, Shaquille O'Neal, Rex Chapman, and some guys asked Shaq if he had to have four guys have his back in the NBA. he said, and he had some, I mean, Eric and I are of that age, so we know. Nobody would mess with X McDaniel. Like, we know these guys. And then on that list is Gary Trent Sr. Why would Shaq say that?
Well, man, you know, I had a reputation for going in locker rooms. And, you know, if you did something to me on the court and I couldn't do nothing about it because I subbed out the game or whatnot, all my teammates know if after the game, if I don't take my uniform off, I'm going down the hallway. I don't care if it's on the road or I don't care if it's at home. I never asked a teammate to go with me. You can ask any of them. But I go in the locker room of 15 guys and I tell them whatever I felt that they needed to know or whoever I needed to address, because that's how I was going to carry myself. And they don't play with me. Don't play with me. And that's how I carried it, you know. And, you know, and word get around about how you get down and things of that nature. And I appreciate them putting me on that list because there's some real goons on that list. You know, Oakley, most people, you don't want no smoke with Oakley. You know, there was a couple of guys, Larry Johnson, you know, Anthony Mason. You don't want no smoke. That's why them guys were bullying like that in New York.